You're now listening to the Eight Plates podcast.
I freaked out. I did a soy jack embarrassing, just a top 10 embarrassing moments since JFK's assassination moment for me. Like, I was in there sitting, I watched Drive My Car, and I saw you guys in Japan, you got this thing where you can throw cigarette butts out in, like a bag, and it doesn't burn.
Oh, yeah. They sell them at the convenience store.
Oh, man. I freaked out. I was levitating.
You open it up, you put the cigarette in, you close it, and then it's done. And then you, next time you run into a public ashtray, you dump the whole thing out, and you can use it forever.
That is genius. I mean,
it's amazing.
Yeah.
You smoke, do you?
I don't know. I have about like 300 cigarettes next to me right now. You can see them. I have like just an entire
a 300 carton.
Yeah, but I don't even smoke. I just have them for like moral support. I used to smoke, but I'm big into like chew and dip, and that like makes you lose your teeth. So instead, I'm doing Zen.
So you're not chewing?
No, not even. I mean, I have some chew, but it's like I want to keep my teeth for a few more years. So
yeah, I have a 42-year-old Japanese guy friend who used to smoke, and then he stopped and switched to dip.
Hell yeah.
I think that made his teeth much worse than they probably were before.
Yeah. Well, it's like it doesn't cause cancer of the lungs, at least, but this is gone. You'll be like Roger Ebert, you know, like no jaw, no chin, nothing.
Oh, fun. Yeah, my dad loves his dip.
Nice.
He loves it. Loves it. I made him give me some recently. It was funny.
Yeah, well, it's like, I don't know, just the visual of a Japanese guy dipping is so funny to me. It's like this like very southern... Yeah.
And he's an opera composer at that, so just put all of that together and see what you come up with.
How the hell do you meet all these... Is that just Japan normal? Like, opera composer? That's so sick.
No, I feel very lucky. It's because I'm a drag queen, right? So yeah. I meet people who are the kind of like alternative or like do like weird, you know, music projects or artistic stuff all the time. So yeah. I feel very lucky about... like what drag has introduced me to in Tokyo, because it's like people I would have never ever like run into or encountered before, but because like they have like a, you know, this aesthetic interest, I get to meet amazing people all the time.
Yeah, but here what you'd see is like, oh, I'm a synth experimental noise musician, like shit like that. We got millions of an opera composer. I don't know, there's just some class to it. I love that.
Yeah, it's cool. He did an adaptation of the Jumanji, like the lesbian movie.
I don't, honestly, I'm coming out as a fake fan of movies. I know it's none of these movies you're referring to. I'm sorry.
No, it's quite all right. No one's a fake fan. You're not a fake fan. We just watch different things.
Actually, let's cut that out for a second. Oh, Zach, that's a good movie. I love that movie, actually.
Oh, totally. Yeah, exactly. It's classic, right?
just tell the audience about it. I know exactly what it's about, actually. I wrote a thesis about it, but... You go ahead.
Yeah, since you know, you did your graduate thesis, I wouldn't want to belabor you with making me talk about it anymore. So basically, this movie is just about some funny little dykes.
Nice.
Yay! That's it.
That's it? what happens? Is it like Thelma and Louise? Or is it more
like it's like a kind of intense like family drama, but like a surprise lesbian relationship like shakes everything up.
Yeah.
And I think the other... He did another film adaptation. I can't remember, though. But yeah, he's put a bunch of like different like Japanese novels and films into opera.
Nice.
He's done a bunch of books by Tanizaki Jinichiro, I think. So cool author. He did the Morioka Sisters. You might have heard of that before.
Heard of it. I breathe. I live it. This is getting
my second graduation thesis.
Yes, I have 700 PhDs, all of the Japanese movies of all time. But I will say one thing that is so sick. That is so sick that someone does opera in Japan. I can't even imagine. Is it still in Latin? Italian?
No, it's in Japanese.
It's in Japanese.
It's all written in Japanese. And I asked him, I'm like, are there other Japanese like composers, you know, that you're like, you would recommend? And he's like, no, just me. I'm like, you better work, bitch.
Hell yeah, dude. They're all hacks. That's why I do movies as well. I've never seen a movie in my life. Unless they said something nice about me, in which case they're the best of all time. But here's the thing. I will say that Japanese probably doesn't have enough long... Yeah, it has to sound unnatural, doesn't it? Like it sounds like the O-D-B. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. I have no idea.
I think it would probably work because every Japanese character ends with a vowel sound.
True.
Except for one. There's only one. N is the only one that doesn't have a vowel at the end. So you're always saying ah or na or to or
that's not bad.
Right. Or bit. Yeah. So they can probably extend those a lot, I think.
Are you still scared of kabuki?
Was I scared before? I forgot.
I mean, it's a little spooky. I'll be honest, it's a little spooky the first time you see it.
I've never seen it in person.
Oh, but our recordings, obviously, you know.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit more afraid of like the buto dancing and stuff where they're all like covered in white and doing like pained, tortured. Yeah, that stuff scares me. I think Kabuki's kind of just like funny. It's cute.
No, it is. It is. And honestly, once you get to know it, it's quite beautiful as well. But it's just the first time you're introduced to that, like that. Like, what the hell am I looking at?
Oh, God. If you show that to my fucking meth-addled uncle, his head would explode.
Yeah.
You say, oh, so you're going over to China? You're going to eat fish every day? Raw fish? How are you going to eat the raw fish? I was like, oh, geez. So
that actually sounds like heaven, to be honest. I thought, you know how much I love fish? You have no idea how much I love fish. Especially raw fish. I mean, I don't know. I can't tell you, but I love it. I eat it all the time. Everything from the sea. If it's from the sea, I'll have it.
What about some raw horse meat? Could you eat that?
No, probably. That's you know what? That's cringe. That's like Instagram influencer shit. No one actually does that in real life.
Good. It's very popular here.
Then I'll have it. It's simple as. I'm not a picky eater. If it's like edible, I'll have it. It's just I don't have this urge to seek out weird things. But if weird things appear to me naturally, I'll have them. I'll enjoy them even.
Oh, I actually, maybe this is a cringe, but I love eating the weird shit. Like, going to the Chinese restaurant and getting the snake. I ate a snake and I felt like it revived my spirit in some way. It, like, changed my body composition. I became, like, a little superpower just a bit.
You're doing, like, shit like that. I turned into, like, snake.
I showed up to work the next day and started hissing at my boss.
That's so
waving my tongue at him.
Let's talk about food. I mean, obviously, as a cultured person, you're a cultured person, right?
No.
Quite literally. I mean, I'd say yes.
I mean, I'm literally sitting here drinking a Sapporo beer at 1:30 a.m. on a podcast.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't get
Hemingway wouldn't dream of this. Hemingway wouldn't dream of this. He'd be like, oh, I got to kill myself with a shotgun. All right. I have to tell. All right, but my point being, let's talk about food because I think food is as important, or if not more, than everything else. And I'm not. I don't mean spiritually, obviously, but I mean like in the terms of arts, in terms of like, cinema for me is probably the number one thing. But at the same time, food is right up there, right, real close.
Right.
You have an immense wealth of possibilities. Okay, that sounded like a TED talk, but seriously, like you have so many things to choose from. And have like, how do you go about it? Do you just say, okay, let's try something new each week, or you just sort of go around and find new things as they come?
I've been living in the same area for about 2.5 years now, so I have my places that I like to go, but they have really big menus, so there's always like new stuff to try. And I have a really adventurous friend, and so whenever I'm out with her, we always like find a new place to go, and we'll just like order whatever like looks good or like surprising or weird. But I have like a really reliable, like izakaya, like kind of Japanese style pub that has, across the board, everything is amazing. So I'll just like try something new from there every time.
Hell yeah. But new in like the dish sense, not new in the ingredients sense, or both.
Like new in the dish sense, I would say. Yeah.
Like I'm talking about like, you know, spices and the different types of animal. Like I'm sure that you have an insane amount of stuff like jellyfish. Or like, you know, different types of oysters. Mm-hmm. And I'm not, you know, these things for me are so fascinating because you have, as a cook, do you cook? You don't cook? What? Are you doing the silent voice or right now? Because I can't hear you right now.
No, I'm not silent, but.
Oh, sorry, but the audio is actually cutting out. I'm not joking.
Oh, is it cutting out?
Yeah. All right, everybody, I'm just gonna find his address and send him a bomb real quick. I'm just gonna kill Zach real quick because he just trolled me. I got epic trolled live, which is kind of pissing me off right now. I thought he was doing like a kind of cool thing. I was like, oh, I'm sorry, I didn't want to speak up. Then what happened was the mic was actually working perfectly and I just got right now.
I'm sorry, I'm embarrassed because I don't cook it at all.
Don't worry, you're gonna die. Basically the thing is I no, but either way, just when you cook or just when you do whatever, but I think cooking is a good example. It's like you have this repertoire of different ingredients and different things. Like this is what you work with, you know, like if you're a painter, you have different brushes. I don't know why I'm talking about painting so much. I've never painted in my entire life. Never one painting in my entire life.
I hate painting.
Yeah, fuck painting. But the one thing I like is that you have this like repertoire. But then the more you learn, you just add more. You just become more of a person. You have more of a skill set because now you have this new ingredient. Like, yeah, I'm going to use this weird spice in this broth now. Yeah.
Yeah, Okay, so during COVID, I taught myself to cook, and I like was like cooking something new every day. And like you said, my repertoire got bigger. Da, 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 da. But now I live in a fucking closet, and my kitchen is the same hallway that is where my shower and my bathroom are, just divided by the door and the entrance, with one burner, one, and it's like unpleasant to cook in. I just don't desire to do it, so I don't.
So you eat out all the time?
Something like that. Or I get bento, I bring it in. I eat like one meal a day.
That's nice. I mean, why would you eat more? You know what I'm saying? Like me too. I'm more. I feel like if you eat more, you just become fat. Is that not
Very
true?
true.
Is that not
If
true?
you eat more, you get fat.
Not.
You said it so true.
Okay, so now he's being Mr. Mean Guy. I will say it's not even.
I'm not being mean. You're right. You're literally right.
Yeah, but you're saying it's a platitude. I'm saying if you get 3 meals, you're probably going to eat more in each meal, whereas if you have 1 meal, you can't overdo it with that 1 meal.
Yeah, so I like to have either a really excruciatingly large lunch or like a nice dinner, and like that's it for me. And then, maybe a snack if I'm, hanging out, got some friends, have a snack.
You know what's brutal? You know what's brutal? The worst thing is you don't eat the whole day, and then you like eat a bunch just before sleeping, and then you can't sleep because you have this tempest
Or then you have
roaring.
nightmares.
Well, that's just normal though. That's not a food related thing. It's just a regular occurrence, really.
Oh, do you have a lot of nightmares?
Not really. I had one that was really spooky though. I woke up and I didn't know I was waking up. So I had this, remember Judy
Oh,
from Twin Peaks The Return? Jowdy?
yes.
I saw that in my room. It was
The
just a
episode 8, like female form, like breathing out the smoke. Did you see that? Oh no, that's no good.
Also like that, but also the version from episode 1 where it's like a blur thing, but
Oh
it's the
yeah, when
same
it's
one.
like in the case and it like breaks out of the glasses, like
Yeah,
ah,
but
yeah.
not even that. You see, for me, horror is very static. I don't feel like jump scares do anything because I'm too late to react either way. If there's a jump scare, the time I process it, I'm just gonna be like, huh? Oh, okay.
Yeah, I think jump scares don't get me either, except I do get a physical little,
Of
and I'm
course.
like annoyed, and then I'm like irritated immediately after. That happened to me in Oppenheimer like 3 times, where it just like was super loud in the IMAX theater. I was like, oh, I can't, ugh, stop it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I wanted to commit violence against women when I watched Oppenheimer because basically next to me there was a woman who was like munching on her popcorn like it was her last meal. Like she was about to get executed the day
Oh
after.
yeah.
And she was like and that for me is there's nothing worse than just someone eating non-loud food in a loud sense. You don't have to do that. It's not an apple. But she was just chomping down like insane amounts of popcorn and I wanted to, yeah, anyways. That's my Oppenheimer experience, but I'm almost, you know what? I'm sorry to admit this, but I'm almost dictatorial when I'm watching movies. I don't want people creating
Oh,
noise.
you'd love it here. People don't even laugh.
That's amazing. I mean,
You don't laugh or anything. Like, in my opinion, in a movie theater, you should make no noise except like stifled cries. Like,
you're
if
right.
you should be like choking back tears and being like, and that's the only noise you can make. If you laugh, they don't fucking laugh and don't scream. Also, someone clapped at the end of Oppenheimer. I was like, not in Japan. Go back to wherever you're from. Don't do that here. Don't import that here. Bring that back to wherever you were. I don't know what fucking bum shit part of, like, I don't know, North Dakota you come from, but stop clapping in the theater.
Also, I feel like that's sort of like a dick move to go to another country and watch an American movie. I would
I'm
say,
sorry, I had to do it all the time, but
no, I mean, you have to do it all the time because because you live there. That's different.
I gotta see. Oh yeah, but I feel like the people who, I think tourists don't see movies here usually. It's usually the people who are like living here.
Which is, I mean, that's a good thing that people living here are doing it. But for me, it's one of the best. It's weird because when you go see a movie in another country, even if it's a movie that's not from that country, you learn so much about the etiquette inside the movie theater, about
Oh
how they
yeah.
work, about like this is so incredible. So, in that sense as well, you know what the crazy story is? I don't know how political you are. I went to Israel and I watched Barbie in Israel. Okay.
Work. That is so cunted down. Oh my God, that's fucking amazing.
I watched Barbie in Israel. It was me. One fat guy in the back, and the entirety of the room was filled with like 9-year-olds. A school went to see Barbie, I believe, which it was kind of inappropriate to me because I feel like that movie is very
The movie
innuendo.
has nothing to do with children.
It's sort of like
It's
a.
not a children's movie.
It's quite crass. I don't mind it, but it, like for to bring like anyway, anyways, and it was awesome because it's like it shows at least I wouldn't say the whole country necessarily, but in that aspect, in the strip mall, in this you know, where the theater was, there is a complete lack of respect for film. Like, no one cares about... They were talking to each other all the time. They're just, like, getting up. They were spilling Coke. And of course, they're children, so I can't, you know, really blame them that much, but... I feel like it wasn't this very austere sort of, oh, we're going to the pictures tonight, you know, that sort of thing. It was just like, oh, yeah, whatever, it's just a movie. And, yeah, and I learned a lot, I think, from that experience.
Wow. Yeah, I saw Barbie in America, and there were some, like, noisy children in the back.
Yeah.
But I had a nice time.
No, but, well, that's the thing. It's like, well, noisy is one thing, but then there's a complete, like, okay, I'm having a conversation at full volume the whole way through. That's a different...
No. The Chinese couple that was sitting next to me in Dune Part 2 said two things to each other in the first 30 minutes of the movie, and I went...
Hell yeah. Absolutely. The dramatic
gopher...
No,
you better shut the fuck up. Oh, do you know that the dramatic gopher is from a Japanese TV series?
It doesn't surprise me.
It is from an idol group that I love called Morning Musume. Yeah. I saw them last year. They are amazing. And it's from their variety TV show that gopher, the surprise gopher, comes from.
But what's the context, you know?
Yes. So they are showing the girls on TV different animals during the variety show. The girls that are these idols.
Yeah.
And they have like funny little reactions to them and interact with them. And by complete happenstance, when they get that little gopher out and it like does that face and the cameraman zooms in, it was just complete happenstance, really. Oh, yeah.
Nice. Well, first of all, this is really dumb of me, but what's an idol and what's a variety show? Like, I know sort of, but like...
I love that you asked me this question that no one else would ever dare to ask. They just say, oh, I have to know what it is.
Oh, I don't know shit, dude. I'm literally clueless.
Fuck yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
I only know about the things I like, but idols are basically... it's an industry in Japan for pop music, mm-hmm. and idols are very young. They're between like the ages of like 12 at the very youngest, mm-hmm. and upwards to like 29.
Yeah.
They make pop groups, and the idea are that they are people that you can become parasocially attached to and like love, mm. and like have a really serious fixation on. And it's like you don't support them necessarily because like they're talented. It's like more about like watching them develop their talent over time, and like getting like kind of a sense of like their social character, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so it's like a personality, sort of like a not reality TV necessarily, but it's like someone you follow for what they, not what they can do, but who they are.
Right. And sometimes they're good singers, and the music is often very interesting, actually. And
are they mean? Sorry, are they mean though,
or is it only the nice hosts people? The hosts of the shows that they're on are always mean. The girls are usually nice, but not always. There are some legendarily bitchy idols, like Judina is a very famous bitchy idol.
Okay.
But most of the time, they're like cute and like nice and funny. But then there are the weird ones. In any case, that's what idols are.
Yeah.
And then variety shows are like... It's like the main form of entertainment in Japan, mm-hmm. and basically any TV show you watch, they'll have popular comedians and celebrities and influencers, and they'll put them on a panel, and then they'll do what they call a variety show. So they'll basically they make them talk about different things, or they put them in different situations and like have them narrate like the clips of them doing those things, as well as like having back and forth banter with the host of the show.
Yeah, yeah.
There we
Hell
go.
Yeah. But how do
you explain that succinctly?
No, absolutely. I can literally imagine it. Actually, midway when you're explaining that, I realize I lied to some extent because I've seen some of that on YouTube. I've seen clips of it. Like, for example, okay, this is really a terrible example, but there's a one thing where the guys have to sing, but then there's someone jacking them off, and then there's
other panels. Yeah, it's like that kind of thing.
Yeah. That was so sick as a concept. We could never do that here.
No.
Which is basically, I say the same thing. It's not even a good, it's like people who say, oh, you couldn't make Die Hard today. It's the same bullet. Like, it means nothing what I just said, but it is interesting to see how what's acceptable is, you know, very really differs from place to place. I mean,
Japanese people have a very weird relationship with sex that is like, it is both taboo and not taboo at all.
Yeah.
And people constantly talk about their sex life and the size of their genitals and all of these things, but you just don't do it in public, or at the on the train or at work. You just do it when you're behind closed doors and then everyone's chatting about it.
And about Ozu, I think Ozu is very old fashioned in that sense. When you see, like, I haven't seen all of his movies, but in Late Spring, they're like, oh, you know how young people are wanting to get married. Like, that's like a really controversial thing that they've shook hands before marrying. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. That sort of thing. So I feel like that it gives a false sense of history, because I remember reading that even at his time, Ozu was already old-fashioned. Like, he wasn't current. So that's interesting as well. Like, when did that change, if it wasn't recent, do you think?
I think it probably changed, I mean, after the war. And then, like, but the major thing that made it, like, go into hyperdrive was the bubble era in the 80s. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, called the economic miracle, because America was so heavily present in Japan and investing a lot in, like, developing an industry that Japan, by a complete accident, basically became an economic superpower in the space of like 20 years. Mm-hmm. And so by the time it was the 80s, Japan was like ultra crazy decadence, like unbelievable. There was like such big manufacturers for technology and cars, and like the country's like economy and like the general wealth of people living in metropolitan areas was so insane, that also kind of inspired like debaucherous lifestyles and an abandonment of old values, I think.
Well, that's the thing. And there's a documentary that Wim Wenders, again, he did. He's like the number one Ozu fan of all time. And he was saying at some point,
he did a documentary about him, right?
Yeah, Tokyo Guy. And it's really, really, really interesting, I think, because he talks to like Ryu, his main actor, and a lot of people who work with him. But just about what you just said, there's a line there which is interesting. It's like at the time of the making of that documentary, so the 80s, almost all the televisions in the world, which was the big thing, everybody's watching TV, that's basically capture humanity inside the television, were made in Japan or by Japanese manufacturers, which is insane.
Yeah.
Like what a grasp they have on this aspect of everybody's life, regardless of where you live, is really crazy. And again, it comes back to the fact that they have a hand in every, they're the like proverbial octopus sort of going to every aspect. Mm. They have a hand in art, a hand in technology, engineering, and now even entertainment like TV and stuff. It's really it's wild.
I mean, in the 90s, there was like a very tangible fear of Japanese people too, because like if you read any of like the Bret Easton Ellis novels from like that era and like leading up to the early 2000s, like there's this like nightmarish terror about like the intrusion of like Japanese values. And if you watch things like Blade Runner, they're constantly like afraid of like this like Japanese like looming force like eating up the world. But then the economy here died in the 90s. And now we probably like, I don't know, are Americans like afraid of other cultures? I guess like maybe like Chinese people, but that it's like that's not like artistically expressed anywhere. But
that's right.
Basically, for like 2 decades, like the West was like obsessed with like scary Japanese like omnipotence. But
that's that actually didn't really very pan out. That's very, very interesting. I think there absolutely is. People are terrified of multiple cultures right now. They're very terrified of the Russians.
They're scared of Russians.
But it's so funny because the artistic output is so neutered that even in someone who has thoughts about this will not make a movie about it, because he knows that, okay, I'm going to put this out and it's going to be like, oh, the xenophobe. Like, it's there's a fear there, definitely. But I feel like, in general, immediately you talk about anything and then people's real emotions come out, like real thoughts come out. Like, anytime you talk about, for example, like Ukraine and whatever, it's like, oh, it's the Soviets again trying to invade. Like, they're back in 1980s, like Reagan era, which is insane. I mean, that's just crazy. In today's world, you think Russia's going to invade the U.S.? Are you retarded? You know what I'm saying? It's like, and then also about different things. Like, for example, you talk about Africa, immediately there's like, and then the comments. You talk about like the Middle East, whatever. There's, and by the way, do you know who the biggest racists are recently who I've seen? The funniest
Europeans.
Also. Yeah, well, that'd be nice, but I think it's actually Indians that I've seen. Indians?
Oh, yeah, they're crazy. Oh, my God. That is a different world.
Because it's funnier to me, because, I don't know, Indians for me intrinsically, and this is not a mean thing to say, I think they're just comedic. There's a certain, like, goofy aspect to whatever they do.
I mean, their culture does not translate very well into English, and the gap is funny.
Yeah, exactly.
I would say the same thing about Japanese people. Like, there's also a gap, and Japanese people learning English, it's also funny. And there's the same thing vice versa for me being there learning Japanese.
Sure.
I know
sure.
that I'm funny too and embarrassing, but I think Indians are in particular very amusing. You're right.
I would say just because there's a sort of It's there's British. It's not just English that's ingrained in their way of life now. It's British English.
It's British English, totally.
Mother chod bloke, like the blood of bloke or something like that.
I would be like, what? Yeah, it makes so much sense that like the biggest piece of Indian culture that's like been prominent in the States is literally Slumdog Millionaire made by a British guy.
Oh yeah, that's just like fake Indian. Like right now they're making The Monkey Man, which sounds like a racist title,
with Dev Patel.
That's right, but produced by Jordan Peele, or directed, produced, I think, by Jordan Peele.
Yeah, produced. I think he directed, Dev Patel directed it and starred in it. I saw the trailer. It looks like John Wick action movie stuff, so I don't know, whatever.
You're being very nice. I'm disgusted by it. Not because
I agree with you, yeah. But it looks bad.
No, but you know why? Because it's the same problem I have. I've talked about this as well. Like the Awkwafina Chinese movies. Like it's not real Chinese cinema at all. Like there's not because there's such an immense culture. Like no matter how much censorship there was in China, there's just such an immense cultural importance of their films over there. And then what they do is, okay, it's still an American movie, but there's an Asian person doing it, so now that's his Chinese cinema. So it's erasing all the culture from across the world, but now we got a person from this race doing it in America, and here's the thing. So if you've seen the trailer, you know that the guy has, like, it's edited and spoken like a Bollywood movie, the Monkey Man.
That's terrible.
That's disgusting because, okay, if you want to make an American story with an Indian person, like Indian ethnicity person, I don't care. Like, of course, dude. But it's not the same when you're doing that and you're like, okay, now we're going to get into the market of the Indian films and do our own American thing so we can just centralize even more of that current of interest in our...
The funny thing, though, is that the cultures that originated the genre, they never buy it. They never buy it on. They reject it every time. Rina Sawayama is this Japanese-born English bitch who does horrible pop music.
Yeah.
And she flops. People don't like her here at all. Like Mitski, you probably know her, right?
Yeah, the singer.
Yeah. So she actually like speaks Japanese like fluently and everything, but she doesn't like do like, she doesn't try to be like, I'm doing Japanese art.
Oh no, yeah. She's very American in her.
And then the funny thing is that Japanese people love her.
Yeah.
Because, you know, she's not doing that weird cultural molestation.
Yeah.
But you're totally right about that. And I did smell it on it. I really, really, really do not care about, like, John Wick action movie thing. Yeah. I can't fuck about it.
Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. It has a nice place. I always think that, like, schlock like that has a place in theaters.
Yeah, but now it's, like, it's over-elevated because everyone's like, where are my cool kung fu movies in the 80s, man? And where is it? Yeah. Like, oh, fuck yeah, John Wick 5.
Yeah. Now the spin-off is Bob Odenkirk from Mr. Show is punching young guys out in the bus. It's but here's the thing about that as well. I would just say that there's I don't know. I just feel like it's good to have like real diversity, but not in the sense that they mean when they mean diversity. In the sense that it's good to have, you go to the theater and it's not just. This big movie and then a shitty, like, terrible 80 for Brady style, you know, like Jane Fonda is now 70 million years old. It's not, you know, like, there's more than that, and I like that. You should have choice. You should go there and have, like, different options. And that's what's supposed to happen, so I'm not going to rally against this movie or that movie, but I think some of them are just disingenuous, and it brings a tear to my eye when, in a good way, when you see audiences, like, in Japan, for example, being like, oh, you're a poser. Go fuck yourself. I like that. Not to everybody, but to people who clearly are trying to ape a style, are trying to get into that niche, and they fail miserably. It's amazing.
I mean, they have like an ethno state when it comes to like movies too, because like I think a certain percentage of films like have to be locally made when they come into theaters, and like foreign films are imported sometimes, but not often.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Oppenheimer just came out here this past weekend.
Why did they even release it in Japan?
No, but I mean, they don't fucking care. Japanese people do not give a shit. They watch. Yeah. They put Pearl Harbor out here.
Nice.
Like, honestly, like, there people are like, whatever.
Yeah.
They want to see a movie.
So right. No, I understand. But still, like, I feel like there's really nothing. I don't know. Maybe I again, who am I to comment?
No, but
on?
because they have like so much emphasis on their own like local film, industry. Like the big blockbuster movies are like things like Godzilla Minus One, made on a $15 million budget.
That's crazy.
And then they have all sorts of like manner of like manga adaptations and like TV drama sequels and original like movies, and there's like a pretty like diverse like scene here. Like if you go see a Japanese movie in the theater, there's like at least 4 or 5 things going on. But I don't know, most people don't have a palate for it, for like provincial, like not elevated Japanese stuff. It's like very unpalatable for most people.
Who would you say is the biggest director around? Like not biggest in the sense of their art, but sort of the equivalent to the Nolans or the, you know, the sort of just blockbuster. Does that even exist in Japan? Because I feel like the ones I know, at least, the ones that make it through to me are so elevated. It's smart cinema. It's not just like a big schlocky dumb blockbuster. But I would say
Anno Hideaki, who is a little elevated, I would say probably very, but he did like Evangelion, and he did a bunch of, he did like Shin Godzilla and Shin Kamen Rider and some other movies like that, and he makes quite a bit of money. And then I think his name is Higuchi Shinji is, he does like stuff like the Attack on Titan, like adaptation. He makes a lot of money. And then
so when you say adaptation, you mean like the anime adaptation, or you mean the film
an
live
adaptation
action?
Of the anime, like a film live action? Yeah,
I didn't know that existed. Okay.
Oh, it's really bad.
Oh, yeah?
I haven't seen it, but I hear it's horrible. I'm sure it's terrible. I don't think that guy's very good.
Well, no shit. Here's my message to producers worldwide. What the hell are you doing? What the hell are you doing? Of course, that when you draw this humongous, like, epic proportioned city surrounded by these giant flesh men and women, of course, you can't translate that into, like, a live action. It just doesn't work.
No.
Unless it's a CGI fest, and that's just stupid, too. I don't know.
I think manga and anime is like better put in its own medium, and it doesn't necessarily need to be made into live action.
Yeah.
Really,
goodness gracious, literature they read this way? Is that true, or is that
it's
a myth?
True. It's true.
How do you read vertical? How does that even work?
So basically, the way it's structured is that they have like written characters, right?
Right,
so
right.
You read them.
Yo, I know Chinese. Zach, don't try to school me on Japanese. I know Chinese. I know what characters
are. That's how it goes.
Yeah.
So yeah, you take those Chinese characters with like the grammar particles and like the other character sets. And it kind of does strain the eye, to be honest, but it does feel unnatural. If you like, I feel like I must have a book around here somewhere to show you, but I can't.
Uh-oh, fake reader exposed.
No, I do. I'm like sitting on my nasty couch.
No, it's... Well, what I saw recently as well is that there's a documentary I want to talk about actually afterwards, but it was subtitled on the side, which is insane. It looks so cool. It looks much cooler than the standard on the bottom, like on the side of the screen.
In English?
Yeah, no. In Japanese? I don't know. In English, it would have been goofy. Imagine like...
I was like, that's really weird. really retarded. But.
Well, it was in Japanese. Actually, okay, what are you even talking about? We got these two movies. These two movies, I hated these movies, Zach. I hated them.
So glad to hear that.
And that's interesting because that's what I... You know, nothing less interesting exists in this podcasting realm than two people being like, hey, you like that movie? Yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, it was good.
Who cares, dude? But no.
I have like a deep-seated grudge against both of these filmmakers.
It meets the opposite, actually. I'm in love with both of them, very much so, but I don't like these. These movies are probably the ones I like the least of each. So whatever you want to jump into, you choose, pretty much.
Okay, well, I'll just say, so basically we're talking about Ozu and Hamaguchi, yeah?
Yes.
So I have actually hated Ozu for forever because I feel like he's responsible for the sort of bland type of sentimental saccharine filmmaking that has become the mainstream cultural output of Japan.
Mm.
And I find that Hamaguchi is kind of like the logical extent of his kind of filmmaking. He's like, he takes everything that makes Ozu films what they are, which is like kind of like plain clothes, like neutral stillness, very muted emotions, and then he pulls on it to like these horrific extents and like 4-hour torture movies of just like people looking at each other. I kind of have like a morbid appreciation for those Hamaguchi movies, but I've always had a grudge against Ozu because I feel like he like killed the medium.
Interesting, because that's the thing. I have had a grudge against him for a different reason, because there's a documentary on him as well where there's multiple directors uh-huh. talking about what they think about him, etc. Claire Denis, I'm sure you know her. She did like Beau Travail.
Yeah.
So she was saying like, I despise anybody that's, you know, lauded as this legend of cinema. You know, people who just people flock to, and that's why I didn't want to watch Ozu for a long time. It's like everybody's mm-hmm. saying, like, oh, he's the greatest. And like, yeah. Kill you. I don't care. I don't care who's the greatest. I just want to watch whatever I'm watching, you know? So this like reluctance to go into this the cinema legend was why I didn't watch it. And then when I did, surprisingly emotional. Surprisingly, you know, very, very deep. Like you say, it's muted, but have you seen the European films like Bresson and fucking Godard? That's like robot mode fully, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just, you know, someone gets slapped in the face and killed and they just have one tear going down. That's the extent of emotion that, you know, you see. As opposed to that, Ozu still has these like outbursts sometimes. But this is all over the place. Basically, this specific film, I think, which one do we start with? What do you prefer, honestly?
Up to you.
No, up to you, actually.
You tell me what to do. Oh, all right, fine. Let's start with the Ozu movie because I have seen that. I'm like less prepared to talk about that one because I haven't seen it in ages.
Well, here's the thing. And here's a smart thing. Well, by the way, these days I'm doing a lot of lazy things. All right. People think I'm lazy, but it's actually smart. Yeah, do you agree with that?
Sure. Tell me more. What do you mean by that?
What I mean by that, for example, these movies, yes, I could have spent 3 hours last night watching them, you know, pushing back my sleep schedule even worse at this ungodly hour of 10 a.m., 11 a.m. for me. But what I did instead is I said, these movies, what are they? They're dreamy. Okay, how do you accentuate the dreamy nature of it? You keep it in the memory. It's sort of distant. It's a little hazy, a little fuzzy. So I didn't watch them again, and that's because it's smart to do so.
Yeah, also, you probably would have hated me if I made you watch these movies again and you didn't like them in the first place. Oh, my God.
No. It's about, here's the thing. I haven't seen much of either, actually. I'm just always... This is all over the place because I have this... I love Drive My Car. I like two-thirds of the movie we're talking about, Wheel and Fortune of Fantasy. I haven't seen Happy Hour, though. 5 hours long? What am I, insane?
I haven't seen it either.
Either way.
One day.
Yeah. Well, do you like longer movies though? You just like how do you prefer?
I mean, I love a long movie if I get to see in the theater. Yeah. I just saw Nymphomaniac Volume 1 and 2. It was like the whole 6 hour thing. Amazing day at the cinema. Like,
oh yeah,
I love like a whole experience when it's like catered. But lately, if I'm watching anything that's over 3 hours, it needs to be like made into some sort of like social event, or else I can't do it lately.
Yeah.
But I also can't watch like 2.5 hour movies because those are like infinitely longer in my brain pattern. So
absolutely.
I don't know. I just have to like structure my thinking around it. But I do like exhausting like super long movies. Yeah. It's like for a reason. But
well, two things. First of all, sometimes I just push it too far. Berlin Alexanderplatz, I'm a huge fan, but 16 hours long for a movie, you got to chill, Fassbender. You know what I'm saying? It's a little too much. The other thing, I'm going to come off as this huge suit. I don't know how to read, but in this book, in the blink of an eye, it's an editor. It's the editor of like Apocalypse Now, etc. He's saying that that's what just made me reminded me of what you just said. Essentially, it's like if you change something a little bit, if it's a little longer, in his logic, it's about editing, but forget about that. Just in the length of movies realm, if it's a little longer than the standard, like 1 hour, 42 hours, it completely destroys you. Because if it's much longer, if it's, let's say, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours, you're prepared for that. You go into it, you readapt. If it's shorter, it's normal. But if it's just slightly longer than it's supposed to be,
feel it.
Yeah, absolutely. And he gives the example of the bees. The bees, all right, look, you have a beehive. In the beehive, you change nothing. They're doing fantastic. You put the same beehive 6 miles away, they're like, okay, this is fully different. Let's rearrange. You put the beehive 20 inches to the right, disoriented. They don't change anything. Everything fails and they all die. And that's what I feel about movies.
Yeah, like you miss one small element and the whole thing comes toppling down, which is also, I think, why people love Ozu so much is because his movies are so like manicured and like articulate. Yeah. They're very like... elegant and every detail is really decided. So I guess, you know, feeling that perfection is kind of what attracts people in the, you know, anti like Claire Denis way, where they want that. It's the same reason, sorry, this is also all over the place, but it's the same reason that people like
the whole show. Yeah.
It's the same reason that like a Kurosawa Akira so much. When I can't stand him, to be honest, I'm so bored by his movies.
Fuck Kurosawa, dude. I love him, but at the same time, I despite, you know, imagine this. You're 20 years old right now. You go into college and you got all these fucking broccoli haired goobers wearing Pulp Fiction shirts being like, actually, I know world cinema, okay? I've seen Seven Samurai. You want to kill them. You want to like shoot up your school. This is you at a 20. I'm not saying us right now. We're normal guys. No violence, no nothing. 20 years old right now, film bros who think they know Japanese anything just because they've seen like two or three movies. It's infuriating. And that's what he's become. Imagine being this guy, all right? You start off, Kurosawa, Akira. You start off doing propaganda films, okay? For 10, 20 years, you do these masterpieces. Some of them, not so much. Honestly, some of his films are just not good. But like the Sanjiro, the whatever, that martial arts movie. Doesn't matter. You do this for years and years and years, and then you become the face of Japan because of one film for a bunch of goobers. It's a tragic tale. It's a tragic story. Yeah.
It's. I was reading the Tarantino novelization of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which I love.
Why?
I thought it was like the best thing ever.
Interesting.
It was amazing, but like, you hate DVDs.
Yeah, I hate DVDs, bro.
DVDs are ugly.
1080p? What is this, 25 years ago? You know?
I have very few DVDs. I'm looking at what I have. I have a DVD set of Twin Peaks, the first two seasons, one of The Comeback, one of Mulholland Drive, and then a bunch of like idol DVDs. That's it. Yeah. But they're really ugly objects, and they're an unfortunate length in your house. Yeah. And those plastic cases are really unattractive. They stink. The idea of them stinks.
PlayStation 2 covers. Blu-ray's even worse these days because now they put them in sleeves. Like it's this like luxury item. Sorry, but yeah, Kurosawa, again, all over the place. We'll stop saying that, but it's absolutely the case. Kurosawa, I will say one thing. Scandal is a masterpiece. Scandal?
I haven't seen it.
Okay, real quick, not spoiling anything. It's Mifune. He's this painter. He's just painting, and he paints goofy. Even the townspeople are like, this guy paints like a weirdo. The mountains aren't red. I've seen the mountains.
Uh-huh.
Then, I forgot the actress's name. Very pretty singer. She comes along. He offers her a ride. They go to the hotel, and then someone oversees them, like a slanderous magazine oversees them, and it's a scandal. Like, are they sleeping together? But they're not. And then it's a legal battle. And then their lawyer is the guy who plays Nikiru, and he gets corrupted. And it's like, what's going on? And then they just sing sea shanties in the bar, and it's 20 people, 20 guys drunk as hell singing Happy New Year in 1950. It's beautiful. Masterpiece.
Wow, okay. I'm hooked on that one.
Yeah.
I mean, Mifune is unmistakably beautiful. Like, his presence is enough to, I guess, they put you in the seat for those long, arduous movies.
Right. But it's an hour and a half, too, which is insane for Kurosawa. I don't know what he was doing that day. Yeah.
Yeah, he's in a rush. He had stuff to do.
But speaking of Kurosawas, how many are there? Because I know there are at least two famous Kurosawas.
Yeah, the other one you're thinking of is Kurosawa Kiyoshi, who I love.
Yeah, me too. Cure?
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cure is amazing. I just actually watched it for the first time last year.
Yeah.
Pulse Cairo is really good. He did one kind of recently called, I think the English title is Before We Vanish. I liked that one a lot too. But he's interesting. He also does a lot of like boring like NHK drama, kind of like normal people movies on the, which is like the case for so many Japanese directors, is like they do four insane masterpieces that are unlike anything you've ever seen before. And then like 15 literal pieces of garbage are for nobody except like Japanese women in their 50s. So, you know, it's but yeah, I love Kurosawa Kiyoshi. He's fabulous.
And he bringing back to the two movies we are discussing today, or maybe not. Who knows? This is the thrill of the ride. But he was the professor of Hamaguchi in the university. He taught Hamaguchi like the techniques and everything, that's why I hate him, dude. Hamaguchi can suck it because he went to film school. That's a loser's mentality. Real filmmakers, all right, we spend $7,000 on shit we don't need and just go out there and do it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. There's a really interesting pedigree in Japan for the, that school that he went to is actually one that my friend just applied to for their film program. So I got to like watch his experience and going through the application process, and it's extremely intense and very like tarded down. Oh, I was hearing about like how they do the tests and what kind of people they accept, and it's really grisly. But there is kind of like a pedigree that people who like maybe they don't have that much money or whatever, they can like, get into these schools and they will have a career. And it does produce like some interesting people, like some good musicians, some good, like Murakami Ryu, one of my favorite authors. He came out of like this system as well. So
Nice.
there, yeah, it does. I think in Japan is kind of more interesting because the country is like so small and like fo like well, it's sprawling, but it's quite focused and contained. Whereas like I don't know, my image of like American film school, who did that? Who's
I
of
think,
any shit at all?
have you seen Dante's Inferno? Like, Reddit, sorry. Have you read Dante's Inferno, like the different levels of hell?
I've read Dante's Inferno,
Yeah.
yes.
That's pretty much what it looks like. UCLA Film School, that's sort of the sort of thing. It's like you go down, and the more you graduate, quote unquote, the more you go down in levels, and the more soulless, and the more like dick sucking, not in a good way. Not cool, fun dick sucky, very terrible, bad dick sucky. Sort of like, I'm gonna, oh my gosh, like they hate you, they hate your guts. They would love to see you burn in a car crash. We're like, wow. That's so interesting. I can't wait to see what you're doing right now. I can't wait. Like this attitude. The death of cinema is one thing, but the death of humanity is also what's going on in these places. It's really a hellhole. And the great thing about it is none of them ever really make it anywhere, which is, I love that. I'm sorry. I'm an evil guy, kind of evil, a little twisted. I see these people being just like, anti-human and then going down that road and then just going back to Starbucks at the end of the day. And that kind of makes me happy to some degree.
Stellar. Yeah, I feel like a little vindication is good for everyone. I've been like getting into Taylor Swift a lot recently, and like her vindictive spirit used to disgust me, but now I think it's fun. But I guess the only director I can name who left a film school and it, or they graduated, completed the program, and is now successful is Ari Aster.
Ari Aster, yeah.
Because he did Meet the Johnsons, the Black People
Oh
Incest
yeah.
movie. He did that as his graduate school thesis, I believe. Crazy.
I don't mind him.
I like him quite a bit. I haven't seen Beau Is Afraid. I missed it in theaters here, and now I'll probably never watch it. Oops.
No, you have to see it because the first hour, I keep saying this to every person who brings the movie up, the first hour is shot in my hometown, Montreal, Canada, Quebec. It's a perfect little thing, little segment of the city. It's amazing. Montreal nation, you know what I'm saying? It's great.
So you're French Canadian.
No, not really. But I live here, yeah. Montreal is a homeless city. We're the homeless capital of honestly the world for me personally. I don't have stats to back that up. But you go there, and there's guys smoking crack outside, not hiding anything because it's not criminal anymore. So you can just smoke crack pipes and shit. People just having sex in the alleyways and everything and just dying. It's honestly, for the schizophrenic traveler, it's the best place to be. It's like a vaporwave of traveling.
Wow.
Montreal.
What do you feel about that kind of lifestyle of just like burning your life away into drugs and like fucking people in the street? It sounds kind of animal and fun. I want
Not
to
for me,
try
but I fucking respect it as hell, dude. All my
it.
favorite, I love Burroughs, I love all these like suicidal disgusting guys, not disgusting guys, but like guys who just went through like I'm gonna do the worst possible thing every single time. Like, yeah, why not take a little hit of heroin extra, you know what I'm saying? I've had three today, why not just a little extra bump? And then they go for it and they just go down that road. I respect that very, very much.
And then they die. That's amazing.
Not always, though. That's what's crazy. Not always. Like, a lot of these guys, they live until like 70, 80 years old, much
And they're
longer than
just
I
like
will.
sitting there like vibrating in the street. I mean, it's like you when you come across these people and you like see their like tent cities and stuff, it's like, how does this happen? It's like, I don't know. I guess it can happen at anyone. I don't know. I'm confused. I
Dear
don't see that many
audience.
homeless people. There's one homeless person that lives near my. There's two. There's one person who lives in between the train tracks and the bushes, and he lives in a little house made out of umbrellas, and he listens to the radio. And then there's one guy who lives in an umbrella house by the public restroom, but he has recently departed. I haven't seen him in like 3 weeks. I don't know where he went.
Probably a CEO though. He went to school, he got a big job, and now he's on top of the Japanese food ladder. I will say this one thing though. You do know, because you've compared the two, the infrastructure, the public infrastructure in Japan. Oh my goodness. I mean, it's heaven.
Oh, it's the best thing in the world. I don't even know. I don't know. I understand why people in America get DUIs and stuff. Like I would probably have four because like it's like I can't
Yeah, you have to drive
imagine
everywhere.
not having like trains. They're so nice and people don't die on them or throw up or like kill you or vibrate. It's just people being quiet and like standing still. So.
That's so nice. Have you seen the actually it's the same actor, I forget his name, I think something Koji, and he played in Cure and also in Perfect Days, this new movie by Wim Wenders. Do you plan to watch that? Because I feel like, for me, it's super, I love that movie, it's super interesting, but for someone who lives in Japan, that's just like normal shit. It's not even interesting at all.
Well, they marketed it really hard here. They put up like in the, they put it in like Shibuya Scramble, like the big crossing, like a major billboard for it. So they were marketing it here. I feel like I would be interested because that director like loves doing like big, broad stroke cultural summations of places that he doesn't seem to know that much about. Like Paris, Texas is like the same thing. So I like that movie a lot, and I bet I would be interested in this public toilet movie that he's done. So
yeah,
sure, I'd give it a try, maybe one day.
No, it's really amazing. But again, that's the thing, like I've seen it three times now in theaters. I love this movie like crazy, honestly the best I've seen for a long, long time. However, I think that a big part of my appreciation for it is this, like, not this cringe, like, white guy exotic thing, like, ooh, I love everything from the other world. But seriously, like, I think the novelty of Japan, the novelty of this infrastructure, of this lifestyle, of the respect people have for each other, even though it's not always the case, but it's sort of a, like, common decency of, like, my first instinct is not to spit on you when I go outside. That sort of mentality, I feel like. And again, I don't know. I've never been to Japan, so I can't tell you if that's true. Probably not. But I think that this vision that I have, this idea of Japan and how it's sort of not subverted, but it shows me another angle of that. That's what was interesting to me, you know? And I don't think that would be interesting to someone who lives there, who's seen it, et cetera.
No, you're wrong. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. I can't stop like evangelizing it. It's my favorite thing in the world. Yeah. And I deep heartedly love like white guy, white girl, like big weepy eyes, like looking around being like, and like, oh my God, the convenience stores are so clean. Like, I actually love all of that because it's so pure and it's like just real cultural like worship and exchange. I love it. And honestly, I think Japanese people do like the same thing when they go to America too, but just with a little bit of a different perspective of things. But no, I'm all here for the
Well, that's the thing. It's like when that happens, it really tells you a lot about the state of people living there. Like if you hate your life and you're depressed, someone being amazed by your hometown is going to just drive you mad. Like, fuck this person. I hate it. I make $14 an hour. But in Japan, if you're a little, I don't think they're more happy necessarily, but maybe they are. And when someone's like content with their lives and they see someone admiring and respecting where you live, it fills you with joy. You know, it's just a different reaction.
I think most foreigners I know here are like really miserable. Yeah. It's crazy. But they have this lifestyle that they dream of when they come here. And then because the dream is divorced from the reality of things, they begin to wither and retreat into their houses where they live in fucking Tokyo. They speak like immaculate Japanese and they don't do anything. They just like go home and like, I don't know, wilt. Yeah. So I don't know. I'm a different kind of person, I guess. So. Yeah. Yeah, I think I would like this, you know, Perfect Days movie because I have like the big, like, oh, wow, like every day, like even today when I was like walking off the train over here, I like noticed like, I noticed like a shrine I hadn't seen before and I was like, oh Japan, oh my God.
Well, that's for sure. And I think that's beautiful as well. I feel like that's a big part of what people miss is having a sentimentality about like normal things. Not being
super sentimental.
Yeah.
Like I take it from my mom. Are you sentimental?
I cry all the time, bro. For no reason, but it's just like fucking I see shit, I was like, yo, that's fucking beautiful. Not out of sadness. I never cried out of sadness, I think. Because I feel like that's, you know, that's not to be like a tough guy, but I feel like that's stupid. It's like, why would you that's use your tear ducts for the beauty only? But then you see something like, you know, two birds are just perfectly perched at an angle and then you see the sun come down. This is fucking that's huge. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
how
that's
could you
nature.
Not be moved by stuff like that.
Yeah, that's like the Wordsworthian philosophy about it. I'm the same way. I only cry out of horror and out of beauty.
Yeah.
That's it.
Horror, like what?
If I think about natural disasters too much, I start crying. If I don't know, I'm very sensitive about the atom bomb for some reason. And if I think about it for like even like 20 seconds, I can make myself cry.
Oh yeah.
Same with like the Fukushima disaster.
Yeah.
If you put footage on from the earthquake there and I hear people screaming, I will cry easily. It disturbs me very deeply.
No,
I cry I cried watching Godzilla Minus One when they're like destroying Tokyo. I
I will
wept.
never admit that, but that yes, I mean it's well made, that movie. I don't care, it's CGI and shit. It was touching, especially when you add the context of the Second World War and the bomb. Like it was, I don't know. This is embarrassing though. Don't admit that all the time. Like stuff like you can cry at Ozu movies, but if you cry at Godzilla Minus One, keep it to yourself. But also, I agree, and I might have done it myself.
I haven't. That's not even the first Godzilla movie I've cried in. I cried watching Shin Godzilla like last year as well. I don't know. I will weep at movies all the time. Something like became unscrewed in me after I watched Twin Peaks: The Return and the last Evangelion movie within like 2 weeks of each other, and it broke my artistic consumption forever. And now I'm so vulnerable. In movies that even when I saw Oppenheimer, which I was not even like that affected by, I was like,
Josh Peck only has 10 minutes of screen time. It's so sad.
I didn't even realize it was him.
No, there's a bunch of, I love that stuff. I talked about it previously as well. I think it's really funny that now A-listers, or not A, you know, just famous people can have 10-minute roles again. I feel like that's great. Like having John Wayne in the background of one shot is so cool because you don't have to feature everybody as the lead star.
Yeah, it feels like the studio system in like a kind of a 40s way or something, and it's just like everyone's on a carousel, and Florence Pugh's in every movie that ever exists.
Do you like her?
I'm just like, okay, I loved her in Midsommar. Like I was obsessed. And then she took a Marvel movie, and then she did Don't Worry, Darling, and I'm like, oh, girl, your agent is out to get you. But I liked her enough in the horrible film Dune Part Two, and she was very good in Oppenheimer. You go, girl. I was like, amazing. So I don't know. I'm indifferent, but I guess I'm not offended.
Same like this. I just don't feel like I think the comparisons to like who's that person? The woman who played Margaret Thatcher, which is the weirdest way to describe her career.
Meryl Streep? Oh my God.
Because you know, this is how the brain works. I'm sorry, yeah, great, fantastic actress. She's played in so many movies, but I don't know why. For me, it's, oh, Thatcher, of course, the woman of iron. But that the comparisons to Margaret Thatcher, sorry, the comparisons to
Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep are completely unwarranted, I think. I feel like she's not there yet. I'm not saying that she's bad necessarily, but it's just you can't say of a 20-year-old, this is this generation's Buster Keaton. It's like, no, he's done three movies. Like, you can't, you know what I'm saying? It's too early.
I kind of want to hit Meryl Streep in the back of the head,
Oh,
though.
yeah?
It's like,
Hell yeah.
yeah, I don't know. Too many prestige movies of her being like, ooh, and everyone having to be like, wow. I don't know. She's all right though.
Let's
I
kill
haven't
Tom
like,
Hanks. Zach, let's kill Tom Hanks.
sure, let's go for it. I didn't see that Elvis movie. I don't need to see that one. So yeah, send them off. Thank you.
There is a very nice place for these sort of like Shakespearean sort of romanticizations, whatever,
Are you
of
calling Tom Hanks Shakespearean
I'm calling Tom
romance?
Hanks,
I love
I'm calling Spielberg
that.
Shakespearean as well, where it's like I'm
You're so
shaking the bag.
right.
Because Spielberg
No,
only
you're
cares
totally
about
right.
he cares about money, Spielberg. That's what I understood recently, and I hate that.
I don't really understand his like recent film output. I didn't watch his like
The
Dewey
Fablemans?
director movie. I didn't see that.
Well, wait a second. David Lynch plays in that. Your favorite.
I'm sure he was there. I didn't see the movie though. David Lynch pops up in all sorts of stuff. David Lynch also has a horrible taste in music.
Oh,
He's
yeah?
like, oh yeah, some of the bands that he put on The Return are so dumb. Like that
Who?
French,
I know, wait, I know
Au
all.
Revoir Simone.
Are you kidding me, dude? The A Violent Cruel World is a banger. I'm so sorry. It's a banger. You don't like that song?
I
Do do
am
do
indifferent about the
do do
song,
do.
but that like little French trio of like girls of being like, I'm like, oh no, it's not for
Are they
me.
really French though? I feel like the name is, but they're probably from
No, I
LA.
think they're probably not. I read on my commute, which is 40 minutes both ways, and
Amazing.
then if I don't read on my lunch, I read before I go to bed if I'm not drunk, and if I'm drunk, I might still read anyway. So
Dude, drunk reading is the best. I'm reading
it's
this.
wild.
Okay, this is the worst book of all time, probably. Heat 2. It's a sequel to Michael
Oh,
Mann's.
you better fucking work. Fuck yeah.
This is Heat 2, the sequel to Michael Mann's 1995 movie Heat. It's I mean, look, there's nothing good
Why is it
about
a novel?
Because he's old. I don't know. And he wants to make it into a movie now with Adam Driver as Al Pacino's character. Have you seen Heat, the original one?
I've avoided it because everyone talks about it so much.
Okay, I agree with that logic, but it's actually a great movie. But either way.
I'm sure it is.
But it's so funny.
Okay, so then he wrote a book, and it's Terabu.
It's absolutely Terabu, because the thing is, you read this, and the original movie is dumb. Like, it's like really dude jock thing. It's like, okay, there's this cop and this robber, etc. Who cares about that? But it's so beautiful because of the music, cinematography, mm-hmm. the actors are subtle. It's a stylistic masterpiece, not really a story one. But then this is all story. Like, the way it's written is like, and then this character did this. He thought, she's kind of hot. No, I gotta leave. Like, it's this very bland style of just fact, 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 fact. And I hate it, but I get loaded. I got some soju in my fridge right there. I got some soju.
Oh, fuck yeah.
I fucking loaded on soju, drinking heat too, basically, in a verb form. And it's amazing. I love that book. Wow. It's my favorite.
That's amazing. I mean, I feel like I'm kind of just generally, like, drunk all the time. Not because I'm, like, drinking before work or something. Just because, like, I don't know. Maybe I just feel like I'm, like, in a suspended state of drunkenness all the time. Which is probably why I feel more... like joy than most people do, but I also feel a lot of like low depressions as well. Anyway, but I always like get like I'm reading Children of Dune right now.
Oh, nice.
Because I read the first two and I love them, and it's like this like philosophical, like spiraling, comparing the entire universe to a single sex organ. Hell, and I'll just like be reading it on the train. Like, so I should probably give it a whirl after I finish my next beer tonight before I go to bed.
Yeah. I will say this about drunkenness. There's more than one way to be drunk. And I like that very much. You use booze as the initial like fire starter, you know, the engine start. But then afterwards you lose sleep. You're sort of in that haze as well. Something good happens. You're drunk on that, you know. So it's sort of a perpetual, a wheel of fortune and fantasy, if you will, you know.
I certainly will.
You know what's funny about this, by the way? I'm not trying to make it extra schizo for no reason, but I will say I have very little to say about those movies, honestly. Not that
I don't really either. See, like, if you had asked me, like,
because they're just good,
you really want to talk about it? Yes, but okay. If you want me to give a comment about the movie, so that we can just like say that we talked about it. It's my favorite thing in the entire world that there is like this bizarre, like anti-Me Too, like complete earnest exchange of like a younger woman like talking to an older man, chatting about like his testicles and like them like reaching a really beautiful emotional conclusion that is represented in the sweetest way, and then having that like turned into something evil by other parties is like such a pressing and hot boiled opinion delivered in that piece. I was really impressed. That's and true. Because it's Japanese, no one ever assumes that it could be reactionary or confrontational. They're just like, oh, those funny Asians. And so they're smuggling in all of these like pretty like out there ideas that you couldn't really float in the US.
I fucking love that. Same thing with old movies as well. I feel like if you go back again, I keep talking about it because I'm really in this. I just finished watching all the like Charlie Chaplin films. Like, I'm big into that right now. I feel expectation that it's just going to be dumb goofy guy falls down and does like, oh, whoops, my cane is low. Like that expectation that people have allows him to be extremely fucking brutal with his commentary. And I love that. Same thing with Japanese films as well. It's like when you see this, it's like, oh yeah, I love this drink. I love bubble tea. Let me watch this new movie. You don't expect to be hit with this brutality of like, okay, this is a human being that's reached a certain level of consciousness where they can just fucking, you know, kill you with their truth. And I like that.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's the whole sort of modus operandi of Yellow Magic Orchestra is like they made this like music that was deliberately kind of like big and jokey about like Orientalism. Yeah. And it was like using like, Susie Wong in Hong Kong is the sexy prostitute for you. And like these like, you know, chopstick melodies and like, they were doing all of that, but then they were like smuggling like really like intense like reformalization of pop music and like introducing sampling and electronic music as it hadn't been seen before. And these like really amazing melodies. It's like I love getting your point in by acting with the system. Like, that's a really great way of getting your point across that people, I think, are not bold enough to attempt to do.
It's hard as hell. It's hard as hell.
It is hard.
Because, first of all, if you try to do that, the radicals will be like, oh, this guy's soft. He's nothing. He's just playing along. And the people who don't know anything about anything, they'll just disregard you.
They just don't get it.
So it's so hard to find something that's so good that everybody sort of relates to it. And then you get to, it's subversion. It's a weird, it's a twisted game. It's a wicked game to play, as Chris Isaac would say. Your favorite actor of all time.
It also requires like a...
Chris Isaac.
It requires a lot of competence in like the general medium of things.
That's
I mean, I know you're a filmmaker and, you know, you work with like pretty like radical like mediums and stuff, but like, you know, I feel like some of the stuff that's like most interesting about, you know, things like, you know, world peace and everything is that like they have such a clear competence for like things like how 90s commercials and like the way that like actual media works. And so they slot in a really perfectly uncomfortable way. It takes like a lot of, like prowess to make that happen.
Yeah. I think so too, because it's like, it's at that point, it's not only the resources, it's also the knowledge. I've talked to, not so, because they were really busy, so I wasn't like bothering them a lot, but I talked a lot with mainly Nick Rochefort, more than Sam Hyde or Charles. Charles was even there when I was shooting World Peace 2. And essentially, you can tell that these people are not just, I'm an internet person and I'm going to make this show or movie. It's people who love cinema, people who know about lenses. They know about they know about lighting. It's not this, you know, I'm known, so let me do it. It's not a Jake Paul movie is what I'm saying. They have this knowledge and have a very clear artistic vision. Whether you agree with them or not, I don't think it really matters. Like, you watch World Peace, the original one, it's just so good. It's enjoyable. It's weird. It makes you puke. It makes you laugh. It's this whole like little nice package of filmmaking. Personally, I have a very different style. Whereas I don't like to do, they're very like hyper real, you know, and their stuff. It's very like, so for me, I like the muted stuff. But nonetheless, when I'm on set and I work with someone and I can see that they're not only passionate but extremely competent, and as you said, and they have a clear vision. That's just, I mean, it's inspiring. It's really amazing. And I like that. I hate people who've got no ideas. You know, I hate that. Like, oh yeah, we'll just do that. Oh, this shot, use 18 millimeter. Why not? It's like, you have to justify every choice. Even if the justification is like, oh, it looks good in my head. But you have to provide that. Otherwise, what are you doing? You know?
I mean, it's a lot to ask 21st century residents to have a desire for anything at all. So to desire to create something and to have a reasoning behind it is virtually unheard of.
But I think it's funny because probably there's never been as many filmmakers as there are today. Not good
I know
ones.
there's so many now.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone has a movie, everyone's acting in something. Film debut. I mean, this is why I like the studio system so much, is because like there does need to be like a quality filter on like what's presented to the public.
That's true. Dude, if I ever get any respect for anything I ever do, I'm going to embarrass myself in a public setting like crazy. I can't wait to, I'm going to have a Lars von Trier moment at Cannes or whatever, where I just say the worst stuff possible by accident and then I have to, you know, scramble for my
career
way. Afterwards.
I actually think you're like very articulate. You're like just, you talk like Tarantino does.
Yeah, that's horrible.
I love him.
Thank you. You're really nice. But either way, any closing statements on the two movies that we reviewed so thoroughly?
This is like the most fun I've ever had on a podcast. Well, not literally, but it's top five.
You didn't
so
have to
fun.
Add that not literally part, to be honest. I would have taken that compliment and been like, yo, this is the best guy of all time, but...
No, but you're amazing, actually. This so much fun.
So
I just have a feeling it would kind of sound like this after listening to the Jack episode, which is quite focused in comparison to this one.
Oh, you'll listen back. Right now, it's all you, but then you'll listen back. It's like, wow, this is beautiful. It's like the mosques. You go to the mosques in Iran, you go to mosques.
Oh, yeah, and it's like this spiraling out
absolutely.
Imagery.
There's a pattern that there's Fibonacci everywhere. But thank you, everybody, for listening. This has been the show. Do you have like a Blu-ray store you can go to?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, do you think you can find the 1989 movie Kinski's Paganini? I've been looking searching the world for this film.
Okay, it's called Kinski's Paganini.
It's not even a Japanese film at all. It's just they might have it in Japan. It's okay. Klaus Kinski, you know, the German actor.
Yeah.
Have you
seen
that movie?
Okay. No, I haven't seen it.
I've been wanting to see that movie forever, but it's impossible to find.
Okay, I'll look it up. There's a pretty good one I go to in Shinjuku, so I'll check it out.
That's insane. That's insane. Because like that movie, the story was he asked Werner Herzog to direct it.
Mm-hmm.
Werner Herzog said, "That's an undirectable script. We can never make this movie." So Kinski said, "Yeah, Kinski's like, fuck you, I'm gonna make it." Basically, like all the way through, he's playing Paganini, the violin virtuoso. But there's like I think 80% of the movie is just sex scenes. He's just like he fucks everybody. Kinski,
amazing.
Like, and then what happened was he put that movie out, it came out, and then he died.
Oh, work.
So I was like, whoa, dude, this is a must watch. You might enjoy it
yourself. I hope the same thing happens to me. Yeah, I'll look out for it. I'll go check it out.
This has been the 8 Plates podcast. Had a fun time? Well, that was only a nibble compared to the millions of billions of hours of 8 Plates bonus episodes you can access on gumroad.com/8plates. Check it out and get a grip.